So then.
Yeah, ending the so 122 on verse 44. The highest duty of a kshatriya is to protect his subjects, for the king who enjoys the rewards just mentioned is bound to discharge that duty. And so in other words, he's getting all the facilities for running the kingdom, right? Taxes and other things, duties and that. But that means then he has to protect the people. Right? That's his obligation. So now the lifestyle of this person, right? So then it would be his, you know, what he does in the morning, noon, afternoon, and evening time.
We're finishing chapter 7.
Yes. Morning duties. Having risen in the last watch of the night, having performed the rite of personal purification, having with a collected mind offered oblations in the fire, and having worshipped brahmanas, he shall enter the hall of audience, which must possess the marks considered auspicious for a dwelling. Right, so last watch is your Brahma Muhurta. So that means the king must be up in that Brahma Muhurta. He takes his bath, he performs his sadhana, right, does his yajna, gives charity to the Brahmins, takes direction from them, right? Then that is what he does before he goes to the court. Right? So then at 6 o'clock, then he'll basically, you know, after the sunrise, then he'll go to the court and then run the manage the kingdom.
No breakfast?
It's 6 in the morning.
But he will be there till noon or later?
Yeah. It's austere being a cake. So you want to know what time they start peeling the grapes for him or something?
But he took big dinner in the after late evening.
Yes, he did. So he's not going to die. Yeah. Tarrying there, he shall gratify all subjects who come to see him by a kind reception, and afterwards dismiss them. Having dismissed his subjects, he shall take counsel with his ministers. Right. So he's not in a rush. He's there to see people. So if there's there people to see him, he'll see them. If there's no one there, then he'll discuss with ministers and do other things like that. But the point is he's there, he'll receive them properly, he'll deal with them, and then he'll dismiss them. So everything's formal. Like that. Ascending the back of a hill or a terrace, and retiring there in a lonely place or in a solitary forest, let him consult with them unobserved. Right? So dealing with the ministers, those things, then that will be in some place where it can't be observed. In other words, other people cannot, you know, how you say, eavesdrop on his conversation. Because otherwise you're dealing with affairs of the state. You can't let just anybody find out about those things. So you have to be careful. The king whose secret plans other people, though assembled for the purpose, do not discover, will enjoy the whole earth, though he be poor in treasure. Right? Because it's through plans that you get things done. It's someone who has a proper plan, he succeeds, not the one with the most money and the most power. Right, who has the best plan, that's who wins. So if his plans are unknown to others, even though they're trying, right? There's the one thing is that nobody knows your plans, but when they're trying and they don't know their plans, means you're very good at making sure they don't know. At the time of consultation, let him cause to be removed idiots, the dumb, the blind, and the deaf, animals, very aged men, women, barbarians, the sick, and those deficient in limbs. Such persons, likewise animals and particularly women, betray secret counsel. For that reason, he must be careful with respect to them. So all these are ones what you generally use as spies. Because they're the ones that you generally don't think about. Right? Right? You know, somebody who's, you know, a crazy person, you don't worry about him much, right? You know, those who, you know, are dumb, right? So they can't, the blind, deaf, you know, all these different persons, you just consider just, you know, street people, so you don't worry about them too much. Animals, very aged men, because they just sit around, you know, like that. Women, barbarians, sick, these are your typical spies, right? So, therefore, they may be also just ordinary people, but in any case, you never know. So, always you make sure that they're not around. And also, if these show up in some place they shouldn't be, you never get too upset. Right? If a properly dressed person shows up in a place he's not supposed to be, why is he there? But if a blind person ends up there, you know, an old person or a sick person or a lady, you don't worry about it much. Right? So that's why, yes.
But if everybody knows that those are suspected people.
Yeah, but the point is it's, but at the same time is they're the natural ones that you don't suspect. Does that make sense? It doesn't matter that you know, it still works. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say there's something's going to be funny the way you don't really like it and all that, right? And so the man comes to the woman and says, you know how much I love you and everything like that, and how beautiful you are and everything like that. It works. You know what they're doing, but it works. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that it works. So that's why it's there. And it can be that there are persons who are not necessarily, but they're persons who can be easily influenced. Right? It means you can go to them and, you know, the person's blind. You know, you grab him and all that. He doesn't know what's going on. So if there's something to say, he'll say it. You know? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that, yeah.
Maharaj, on the previous point, the previous time, we see that many successful leaders, that they do the same method. They have time for the people.
Yeah.
There is a reciprocation.
Yeah. Because the people means someone who you feel you have a relationship with, you don't mind, you know, working for or being submissive to. So many people feel that it's fear that will make things work nicely. But it's not. It's actually that appreciation, that respect, that's always better.
On the contrary, we can see in our movement many leaders who don't have time for their subjects.
And how is that working?
Yeah, exactly.
Temporarily, fine.
I don't see it. Can you give an example?
You don't have to look much far from here.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, what I'm saying is that there's no time, but it doesn't work out.
It seems to work in quantity.
No, it works when you're sitting in a meeting with such people. From their vision, the whole world's working fine. But if you go out and talk to the people, you know, it's like, what do they have to do with your life? You know what I'm saying?
There is a picture.
Huh?
There is a picture.
Maybe, but the point is it doesn't work. It means, in other words, they're not having influence, they're not creating protection. You know? It may work that there's no problems, but that's not because they're resolving the problems. Or they're inspiring that persons to resolve the problems, just those who can do it. You know what I'm saying? But the point is you see, you know, in history, those who did spend that time or were approachable, but in this formal way, you know, they're received, they're dealt with, and then they're dismissed. Like that, it works very well. But if they just come in, they can hang around, it doesn't work either. Because otherwise, where's the respect? You know? So that's why it's done in this way. It works. You expect that.
So the meetings is a traditional way of dealing.
This is court, yeah. Means you have the leadership is there and they can come and be addressed by those who are working under them with their difficulties. And so together they'll resolve it. Right? If it's something easy, they'll do it on the spot. If it's something more serious, then they'll deliberate, like it says, afterwards. And things that aren't covered by court, you know, just how the kingdom's running, the economics, the politics, all that, that's discussed amongst the ministers and the king. Does that make sense? Midday deliberations, right? So in other words, from morning to noon, that's generally that time, that's, so 5 or 6 hours, that's when court is run. on a daily basis.
Why is it important to keep the plants secret?
Because, if I say, educated intellectual liberals never get anything done. The people they complain about are the ones that get things done. Why do they get things done? No one knows what they're doing. That's why they complain. They don't know the method. See, you have two things. One is what's here from the political standpoint. If you know what the other person's doing and you're opposed to it, then you can immediately make a plan to block it. Right? So right there, there's problems. So all this idea of truth, you know, that's not reality. Truth is there when you're dealing with knowledge. But when you're dealing with politics, it's what's efficient. Right? You know, they like to make it seem like everything's like that, but these people much of the time are poor. You know, and if they're not poor, it's how they make their money. You know, like a lawyer or a journalist. They make their money by saying truth, but it's not about truth, it's about making money. It's just one of the things you can make money from. You know what I'm saying? So you have a plan, people who can create obstacles to that plan, if they don't know about it, you can get it done. Does that make sense? So in other words, those who should know about it, but anybody who doesn't need to know about it, doesn't. Right? So whoever is actually involved in affecting the plan, they're the only ones that need to know. Does that make sense? Right? The other thing is when you talk about something, that it's done and this and that, then it's put out into the ether and you get that effect. Because speaking gives effect. So in this way also, by speaking about something too much, the effect is already used, and then when you go to apply it, it doesn't work. That's a subtler form that most don't know about.
Yes. And yet we do know that people who talk too much rarely get anything done.
Of course. Like that. Because you see, successful persons don't talk too much about what they're doing. They talk to who needs to be talked to, how much needs to be talked, and that's how it's done. See, others who don't get things done, they like to hear about everything. Or someone who gets done wants to exactly know what you're doing so that they can either somehow or another take advantage of it. So it's either for the purpose of gossiping or for the purpose of your own benefit that you want to know what everybody else is doing. You know what I'm saying? But it's his business to know what everybody else is doing. Right? In other words, his enemy shouldn't know about his plans, but he should know his enemy's plans. Otherwise, how do you protect your people? Like that. So that's why it says who can keep the secret, even though the others are trying to. It means, in other words, if you're a king, all the other kings are trying to find out what you're doing. So now, if you can find out what they're doing and they can't find out what you're doing. It may not sound great, but we're not talking about so-called idealistic things. We're talking about the reality of how things function. You know what I'm saying? Because we have to remember, is the academic chair in the arts section, you know, because you have art, science, in the arts section, they'll talk about this stuff. But the point is he's a PhD. What can he do with his PhD? The only thing he can do is teach in a university others to make them into what he is. It doesn't do anything in society. You know what I'm saying? But if you go into the business area, the science, they don't talk about this. You know what I'm saying? The point is that what you want is that there is proper definition of proper activity. So proper activity is being done. But you don't have to talk about it, you just do it. What is worried is that the person will do something that's improper. But improper is not defined by a standard that's set by God or by religion or by the law. Proper is by what that supposed intellectual feels. So if he says it's wrong, then you're not supposed to do it. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's nothing to do with actual authority, it's about themselves being the authority, so that's why they want to know, so they can make a decision.
And he thinks he qualifies it by talking about it.
Means he qualifies simply because he has an opinion about it. You know, if you have an opinion, you're qualified. You know, so previous time is just because you had an opinion wasn't enough. You had to have a qualification. You either had to be somebody very thoughtful, or someone who knew the science, you know, or someone who had experience. Right? Then it was like your opinion had a value. Now it's just because you have one, then it's your right. But anybody who's an authority doesn't have one. This is the fun part about the liberal, is that if you're liberal, anybody has an opinion, but if you're conservative, you don't have the right to one. You know what I'm saying? So free individuals are only liberals or people that the liberals like. But if you're not a liberal, you're not actually counted within the human form that you actually have rights. You understand? That's the difficulty. So that means anything that's perceived as authority is put in that conservative category. So therefore, the Shastra will be there, you know, religious or other authorities are put there. Anything is put there that is not just whatever happens to be the moment what people are feeling. So the difficulty comes is it's not viable as a process. You know what I'm saying? One can say, oh, there's certain benefits. You could say there are benefits, but at the same time, how much benefits are there? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like how much freedom is there? At midday or at midnight, when his mental and bodily fatigues are over, let him deliberate, either with himself alone or with his ministers, on virtue, pleasure, and wealth. So in other words, at midday, because he's already dealt with the court and everything, or at night, at the middle of the night, you know, when the place there, everything's very peaceful and calm, these times he can sit and deliberate on very important subject matters. Virtue, wealth, pleasure, means that, so dharma, artha, and kama, he can be dealing with, like that. On reconciling the attainment of these aims, which are opposed to each other, because the point is if you're through virtue, you're getting wealth. But if you don't use the wealth, then what's the balance with what's the point of the virtue? Right? And the wealth is there. If it's not used for pleasure, then it also is as good as not having. But if it's used for pleasure, you're using it up. Does that make sense? So the problem is they seemingly are opposed to each other, so you have to balance them all. Right, so you're performing what is your duties in the proper amount. You're dealing with your own personal development, you know, family, friends, whatever the social things are, your occupations like that, and using those facilities properly in the interaction with those persons. So you always have to find what's the proper balance.
Right. So this personal dealings are more after the court is finished?
Yeah, these kind of dealings are outside of court.
So they're considered personal.
No, not necessarily. You might deal with something like that, but they're not personal. These are still of the means how these things are being applied in the kingdom. It also can be personal, but it's for their own development that they're discussing, like that. Or it may be just his own. He's thinking about how he can improve his own. So the point is you're discussing at these times how to improve, you know, oneself and the kingdom, like that. Because court, you're just dealing with what comes to you in the court.
Is that? And this, the whole schedule, you must do it, or is it just a suggestion kind of thing?
No, this is pretty much what works, like that. You know, in other words, you'll notice here he's not out at a party all night. You know, and gets back at 4 in the morning to go to sleep. No, he's supposed to be getting up at that time.
So standard.
This is standard, what all the kings do. You see, like Krishna, when he would get up in the morning at the third watch, get up at 3, and he'd do these exact things that's here. You know, so that's the point. Because this is how, if you're a king, this is the kind of schedule you like to do. Like that. The prince will be following a similar schedule. He'll grow up, but because he's not in the court yet, that's when he'll go out and then learn, you know, how to ride the horses, how to deal with all the weaponries, all the different things like that. So, in other words, that's the time when either training for the kingly duties or performing them. You know, and sadhana is sadhana, so that's always the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Would there be a distinction between someone approaching the king for counseling or for sorting out a dispute?
But what in counseling, what do you mean? What kind of...
Say someone wants some guidance. He wouldn't look for the king, he would look for the Brahmins.
But guidance means?
Meaning, for example, he's not sure what direction to take, or he...
The direction in what?
In his work.
Generally, he would talk to others of the community and stuff like that. You know, unless there would be something that it has to do with he is having an office, you know, that's being done for the king. He's a superintendent of something or that. But then you wouldn't discuss that in the court. You would discuss that generally at these other times when the king would discuss with the ministers or things like that. Does that make sense? So it means your more official be like this, is that when after the court has been dealt with and that time that's left before midday, that time then would be the general time to discuss those things. Right? Because this time we're talking now is more of you know, a deeper deliberation on things. So it's more of a discussion. It's not as much management as trying to understand what should be done.
Okay, what an example. Let's say that we are not talking about Sita and Ram, but let's say Sita had some trouble. She wanted to take some counsel.
From Ram?
No, would she take from Brahmins, or who should she look for in a community?
But that means the king's wife.
Now, in this case, it's not
good. It means you leave it a few sentences, then, well, actually, it's going to be a few more sentences. Yeah, means basically another 50 verses, and then you'll get your answer to that particular question. Because after that, then means this midday deliberations, what it deals with is going to go on for 50 verses. But then it says, having thus consulted with the ministers on all these matters, having taken exercise and having bathed afterwards, the king may enter the inner apartments at midday in order to dine. Right? And so he'll stay there until the afternoon. Right? So that's their time. Does that make sense? So there'll be 3-4 hours that he's inside the house. So that's the time with the family. You want to use another example?
Someone has trouble in the community. He may be in trouble with the court for doing something not proper in the community.
Yeah, but then that comes to court. That'll be within the 18 laws of the court.
Okay. But if he wanted to understand what would be proper, he wouldn't go to court, because that would mean execution. He has to wait for
Yeah, it means whatever it is, members of the community. Court is just dealing with the laws. We'll see what's dealt with in the court. Okay. Okay, on bestowing his daughters in marriage and on keeping his sons from harm, because then you're creating alliances with different kingdoms, you know, seeing that the family is going on properly and everything like that. So that on sending ambassadors, on the completion of undertakings already begun. So sending ambassadors to other countries, what you're going to do, you know, what's the plan and things like this. Or undertakings, they're building roads or bridges, or they're, you know, some kind of thing that they're doing for the state. How is that going on? Is it actually being completed? In other words, he'll be following up on these things. They'll decide on doing these things, but now he'll also see that he follows up on it. On the eightfold business and the five classes of spies, on the goodwill or enmity and the conduct of the circle of neighbors, he must carefully reflect. Right, so now then there's all kinds of the political considerations. All these things you must be. So in other words, their own development, works that are being done for the state, how the political policies are being implemented so that the state will prosper. This is all what he will contemplate. Like that. Yeah? Okay, Riti. According to Sukracharya, the eightfold business is, 1, acquiring the receiving of revenues, 2, expenditure, gifts to assistants, 3, dismissing, removal of wicked servants, 4, forbidding, stopping the improper activities of his officers, 5, propounding the right course of conduct, correcting improper conduct, 6, investigation of cases, settling of doubts arising in regards to the duties of the varnas and ashrams, 8, inflicting of punishment as a result of wrongdoings by his subjects, 8, purificatory penances in connection with mistakes due to lack of judgment on the part of his subjects. A king through his spies must learn about the goodwill or enmity of other kings and their subjects, as well as his own subjects, priests and ministers. That is what is meant by on the goodwill or enmity. Right? So these are all the different things. So you can see a lot of these there, just seeing that, one, has to get revenue, but then he must take care of everybody within the administration that they're properly taken care of. Right? And then after that, he has to see that they're all doing their work properly. Because if any of them are doing their work properly, that must be corrected or they must be removed. Right? So that's there. And then after that, then what are the court cases, what are the people doing, and then also what's going on in other kingdoms. Right? Because if a kingdom is running a very peaceful kingdom, the citizens are very happy, very prosperous, you don't go to war with them. Right? You can only, if the kingdom, the subjects aren't very happy with their king, they're not satisfied, then he's not going to have a strong position. Right? So you have to know what's going on. Also, is that his people are satisfied, then it's the opposite. You don't go to war with him, but he'll be in a position where he'll feel strong. He can go to war. You understand? So that's, though one is happy that the next kingdom is prosperous, you also just have to keep your eye out that he doesn't get, you know,
too prosperous.
Yeah, too enthusiastic.
Mars, in the kingdom of an Iskon temple, you have a number of subjects, and the standard is not very high, cleanliness, you know, sadhana, things like that, and consistent efforts have been made for training. Is it better to take the risk and reduce the number of subjects, have a smaller, more tighter ship, or just go on with the bigger,
juggernaut?
Form as it is.
No, its point is there's standards that are there. They're regular standards. Those who are willing to learn those standards, even though they may not know them, but they're willing to learn them and practice them, though they may not be so expert so quickly, then they're qualified to be in a temple. But if they're not willing to, why should they be in a temple? They want to be dirty, go home. You know, you can order all the takeout you want, leave the boxes around the house. You know, it's standard. But the point is that the temple has to be those who are setting an example for the community. Like that. So if they're not, then you'll find a smaller ship will work much better than a bigger ship.
Even if it puts pressure on the fewer remaining?
They won't be a problem for them. Pressure is not a problem if everybody is working. Pressure is a problem when you're the only one working and everyone else is sitting around. Does that make sense? Yeah.
There was a number of times in the mid-70s where Srila Prabhupada said, stop expanding and use the phrase, time to boil the milk.
Yes, boil the milk. He wanted the standard to be increased, developed, like that. Because if the standard is very high, then the community is inspired. And then they want to try to live their life like that, right? One, they'll participate in the temple projects, they'll be very supportive, they'll take example, you know, so it'll improve the community. But if the temple is full of persons who aren't very inspired themselves, they don't want to support temple activities because it supports people that are uninspired, right? Because in their own life, they would just fire them, you know, like that. So why would they support someone who they would fire, right? Does that make sense? Like that. And so, and you're not going to take any example from them. So it's nice. They'll come to the temple for darshan, the deities. You know, take some little prasad, but not in a, you know, in a formal way, and then leave. They won't feel part of the scene. So the idea is that who's in the temple, those should be persons who are setting an example in some way or another. By their service, by their knowledge, by their devotion. Some way they're a leader. That's the idea. That's what the temple's for. It's not that it's only supposed to be temple and anyone outside the temple is useless, or it's only supposed to be community because the temple is, you know, what's the purpose? You have to have both. Okay, the circle of neighbors, because you mentioned about you have to watch the circle of neighbors. On the conduct of the middlemost prince, on the doings of him that seeks conquest, on the behavior of the neutral king, and on that of the foe, let him sedulously meditate. These four constituents, Prakriti, form briefly the foundation of the circle of neighbors. Right. So, in other words, these are what you have to be able to see, is that you have your kingdom, the kingdom next to you, and the one on the other side of that. That's what you're looking at. That's the circle. You know, because on the other side of you, there's another kingdom. On the other side of that, there's another. So in other words, you're in this, someone else's circle. They're in your circle. So everyone has to be watching the circle. Because the one next to you, that's the one that naturally wants to, may attack you. But the one on the other side of him, he wants to attack him. And if you attack from one side and he from the other, there's no problem. So the one on the other side, that's your friend. You understand? So therefore you have your friend, but the one who's your enemy, the one on the opposite side of you, is his friend. Right? So therefore you have to be able to watch everybody. This is just how it works. So the point is you understand it, you can use it properly to protect your citizens. Right? Because the point is you don't want your citizens to come to undue harm because someone else understands the circle better. Yes.
Seems like those kings, they should have been superhumans.
Basically. Yes.
Can we say that in Kali Yuga there are no kingdoms anymore because there's no superhumans kind of things?
No, it's just that, see, is that having kingdoms is the natural form in which people are protected and feel satisfied. But in Kali Yuga, one of the, you know, elements is that people aren't satisfied, so that means they're not protected. That means then you can't really run kingdoms.
So it starts from the people? It starts from the king?
It starts from that people in Kali Yuga don't want to actually have things work properly.
So it's by definition.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? In any case, you still have the kingdoms. They're called countries. Because for the countries, it's the same thing.
But it's a poor replica of what?
It is a poor replica, but it is a replica. It still works in the same way. So the point is it doesn't matter whether you have a king, you have an oligarchy, you have a democracy, or whatever it is that you're using to run the place. If they're doing it to protect the people, then you get the effect. That's the point. But if they're not doing it to protect the people, it doesn't matter. It means a king not working to protect his people is just as bad as, you know, someone else who's not, some other system that's not. But if the people are being protected, then it doesn't actually matter the system, right? But it's very natural that kings, because people look up to that. The problem is in the past, there's not that many kings, at least in the Western, that one would look up to. You know, that's the difficulty. So there's not a good...
Model.
Yeah, there's not a good model. People don't really have an understanding of it. But the point is that the king doesn't have to function that way if he's properly trained, has the proper character. So then, you know, whatever system you want to work, what you want to run, then works quite well. You know, as long as it's designed to protect the people. You know, like that, so that the people are prospering and all that. It's not meant that the government prospers. The government has to have money to be able to protect, so that's why it needs money. But it's not a business to make money. It's something that how you take care of the people. So it doesn't really matter what system you run. Right? Just king, you know, just even now you have so many around the world kingdoms. And the people respect the monarch, though they don't necessarily have political power. You know, people like the concept. You know. Is that, you know, because there's one person that you know it goes back to. Otherwise, you know, like you say, there's the parliament. You know, it's just, who is it? You know, it's the parliament, but who? It's always changing, you don't know who they are. But if you say the king, or the president, or the chancellor, or the prime minister, you know there's a person. So people appreciate that there's a person, they know, this is the head of the system. Does that make sense? So that's why the Vedic mentions the you know the kingdom, because that is the natural system. But all these principles apply anyway. So instead of a kingdom, then it's the next country. You know, does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Yes.
We were talking before about how a king would protect his people from undue harm,
yes,
from an intruder. If these kings were kind of superhuman, would they allow the people of another kingdom, which they are conquering, to be subdued or subjected to undue harm?
No. The point is that you're fighting a war, it's happening outside the city.
Yeah.
Right? So the point is the only ones that are being disturbed there are going to be warriors.
Yeah.
Right? So that's their business.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If they get killed, no one's going to complain. But after it's over, whoever wins, then the city is there, that's what they manage.
Yeah.
You know, so the point is who's going to control the people, who's going to see this going on. So generally speaking, in your natural form, there's no need to fight between the kings, if everybody's doing a nice job. But if the king's not doing a proper job, or the king is disturbing your kingdom, right? Either he's not protecting his own people, or he's not taking, or he's bothering your people, then there may be a case for a war. But if technically, if you're running your kingdom nicely, he's running his nicely, then there's no need for war. So in previous ages, you wouldn't see so much war, right? Most of the wars you see about in the other ages are, you know, between the demigods and the demons, because the demons always want to take over the heavenly planets, you know. But other than that, you generally don't see. But they're prepared for it, because, you know, anything may happen. Because you know, you always have the you know, demoniac elements, so then, you know, because it could be anything. It could be tribals, it could be, you know, all kinds of things could cause you problems.
We see in the Mahabharata when they send the ashram in a horse.
Yes.
And then somebody doesn't want to pay the revenues or whatever,
right.
And then they fight. Is it a good reason?
From which side?
Obviously for the ones who is fighting with, not the smaller ones.
Means the smaller one may not want to pay because he doesn't respect, who knows what it is, you know, back when he was a kid, and you know, that one he, you know, stole his you know, how you say, his gulab jamun and all that, so he's hated him ever since. So therefore, you know, his, you know, second cousin or whatever it is, you know, he just can't stand the idea of him being king. So you might have that kind of an element.
It was just on the point that they didn't fight useless wars, or not for a good reason, or...
Yeah, so the point is there is to establish oneself as an emperor, then you're also, you have to do so much benefit. It's not that you just claim that you're the emperor. It's you have to do benefit, like that. So the yajnas that have to be done and all those different things, you have to have that support, because otherwise you can't perform that kind of charity and benefits for others. One is that if you have the emperor, that they're all working together, then there'll be a common mood in which an area of the world or the whole world will have, right? And so generally, they're not going to be supportive of someone who would not work to a proper benefit. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But you do have the element that, you know, whether they're God conscious or not, it's another thing. Like Jarasandha was like an emperor in his own area for quite a bit of India. So he was a good ruler, but he was a demon. Right? So then that will be a problem in establishing God consciousness. But as far as the kingdom running, it will be fine. Like that. But otherwise you see is that for the Ashwamedha, that's smaller, but like the Rajasuya, then one had to basically do the same thing. But I don't think you sent a horse around. And so then because the amount of wealth that was brought, because you're doing these programs, Yudhishthira Maharaj was feeding the Brahmins. He would feed 100,000 at a time, one sitting. Right, and that was going on all day. So all day they were feeding, you know. So in other words, millions of Brahmins were being fed every day, you know. And this goes on for some time. So to be able to do that, you have to have a lot of people supporting you. So if all the kings are supportive, then you have the kind of wealth because they give that tribute. That tribute goes into that sacrifice. At the same time, it goes into, if you're the emperor, it means if any other king has a problem, you have to come and protect him. They protect their kingdom, but you have to protect him. Right? So if another king is coming and fighting with him for undue, you have to solve that. So it's not that it's just you're the emperor, so you control everything. No, they control their own kingdom. You have to see that they're protected in controlling their kingdom. That's what the emperor. You know, it's not just he's a bigger king. No, an emperor is one who protects kings. The king protects the people. Does that make sense? He'll have his own kingdom, but it's his responsibility to see that all those other kings that are under him are protected. So it all comes back to this principle of protection. Okay. The minister, the kingdom, the fortress, the treasury, and the army are five other constituent elements of the circle. Right? Means the minister, means because without the minister, how do you run your kingdom? Without your prime minister, because he's the one who knows. The kingdom itself, but you know, what's the meaning of any kind of protection if you don't have an area to do it in? The fortress means that's where, if there is any problem, that's where it's going to come back down to. The treasury, if you don't have money, then you can't maintain the kingdom or the fortress, right? The army is what's going to do the fighting, but you need the treasury to do that, right? So each one, you need all the others. So all these, the five, have to be considered. Let the king consider as hostile both his immediate neighbor and the supporter of such a foe, as friendly the immediate neighbor of his foe, and as neutral the king beyond those two. Right? In other words, the one next to you is the foe, the one next to him, outside that, farther away from you, is the friend, the one outside that is the neutral. Right? That's for you. You know, so that's how it works. And that you have to go out in all, you know, 360 degrees. Right? Like that. You know, unless you're in Iceland or something, then there is no one else around, you know, it's like that. You know,
well, they have some problems.
Okay, the whales to the south and the Eskimos to the north. And, you know.
That's why they have so many problems internally.
Okay, so if you're in this house, the guy on the house opposite.
Yeah,
okay. Let him overcome all of them by means of the four expedients, conciliation and the rest, employed either singly or conjointly, or by bravery and policy alone. Right? So with Samadana Veda Danda, he's supposed to see that it's all taken care of. So that's how you're going to affect things. Right? These other things, the eight, then that's considerations of what you have to deal with to run your kingdom. Right? Then he'll have the six that will go into that is then how you deal with you know, in dealing with the army and stuff like that. If you're going to deal with Beda and Danda, I mean with Danda, then that means you require the force. So then there's six considerations of applying force. Does that make sense? But the main thing that you always come back to are the four. Does this make sense?
What's Sama
Danda? Sama means conciliation, means, you know, trying to work it out peacefully, right? Or second is giving dana, giving gifts, and that way trying to please them. The third one is beta, where you give, what do you call it? What will happen if it doesn't work out the way it should? What do you call that? Ultimatums, right? Ultimatum, or splitting the parties, right? If you have somebody who's very fiery and creating trouble, if you split him off from his supporters, he doesn't have a support base, so therefore he doesn't have the power. Does that make sense? Or you give an ultimatum, either you know, stop making this trouble or this will happen.
So that's beta.
That's beta, that's splitting, like that.
And Danda?
Danda is force, yes. So to use force, then there are six measures that you have to consider. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So the six measures of royal policy. Let him constantly think of the six measures of royal policy. This is called guna. Right? Like that. Alliance, war, marching, halting, dividing the army, and seeking protection. Because if he's in a particular position, he has to know which one of those he can actually apply. Having carefully considered the business at hand, let him resort to sitting quiet or marching, alliance or war, dividing his forces or seeking protection, as the case may require. Right? So he has to see what his situation is. So you always have to be considering these. The term halting in the previous verse and sitting quiet refer to neutrality. Right? Because that's the one, it means, in other words, if you don't know what's going on, then do nothing. You know, in other words, don't do something that'll create trouble. Stop and then find out more. Right? Yes.
The other day we were talking about how the Kshatriya, he walks into a dark room.
No, it wasn't so much a dark room. It was, let's say, of an abandoned house.
Oh, okay.
So a Brahmin wouldn't go into it.
Okay.
Unless he can see. If he can look through a window and see everything, then he might go inside. But if it's such that he can't see, you won't go inside because you don't know what's in there.
How does that relate to the Kshatriya doing nothing if he doesn't know what is going on? I mean,
because
it seems like there's
a contradiction. No, it means if you don't know what the enemy's doing, why would you do something until you know?
So that relates to people?
No, it means going into the house, what could be in the house?
Snake.
Okay. Anything else?
Dacoits.
Dacoits.
Yeah.
Else? A lion, tiger, or bear.
Yeah.
You know, is that,
Safety person.
Yeah, okay. Well, that one's not going to be necessarily a problem. But, you know, in other words, he can take care of that himself alone. So it's not a problem.
So it's not figuratively speaking, it's an actual house.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like you're traveling from one place to another. You're out in the forest and there's an abandoned house. So you may want to take some rest or this or that. The Brahmin, if he can't see what's in the house, he doesn't go in.
Okay.
The Kshatriya might, because he can deal with it. But the king must know that there are two kinds of alliances and of wars, likewise two, of both marching and sitting quiet, and two occasions for seeking protection. So in other words, all these six, then they have two applications. So that was before he talks about the 12. Right? You know, so you have all these things. You have these eight, you have the four, or you have the six, and then you have 12. So all these are depending on how you do it. So you put them all together, you get 72. So in other words, that's all the things that a king has to consider. In other words, we like to take it that, you know, you just get a position, and so because you have the position, therefore now you're qualified, you're expert at it, and whatever it is already done. Right? But the point is no, there's all this that goes along with it. Right? Here we're just touching on it. When we get into the Artha Shastra, then you see how much, like when we set up here, gifts to assistants, dismissing removal of wicked servants, and stopping the improper activities of his officers. The amount of officers that he has and what they do, that's not even discussed here. That's discussed in the Artha Shastra. So he has an officer for everything.
Somehow connection for like Śrīla Prabhupāda, what he did. It's like a, this is a little bit like a preaching, but Śrīla Prabhupāda is the kind of a superhuman what you are looking at. He did all of this. Then he is spiritual master and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we have in just in few tens of 100 years there is these superhumans who did this, but they were in the position like a preacher like that.
No, you can apply this because this is just how to organize things. Okay, it means how to organize things and how to see that it effectively gets done what it's supposed to and the obstacles are removed. So if one can get through, that one doesn't have problem with the terms and the examples, one can take this and apply it anywhere. The difficulty is people will have a difficulty with the terms and the examples, so then they won't use them. But like this standard kind of thing, this is the Vedic, generally it's not used as much because there's plenty of other experience in the business. But in other parts of the world, they use the military manuals to do business. Because it's just how you get done. In other words, there's your company, there's the company next to you that deals with the same kind of thing, that's your enemy, right? And then there's the company on the other side of him that's competing with him, he's your friend. It's the same kind of thing. You have the same. You can go and talk nicely with them and say, hey, we can work this out. Or you can, you know, in this case, you probably have to give something and this and that. Or you tell them, if you don't do this, we're going to, you know, buy you out, close you down. We're going to this, we're going to do that. Or if not, then you go to war on however that the business community does it. You know what I'm saying? So it's not exactly the same. You know, everyone's not out there with battle axes and stuff like that. They're all out there with their suits and briefcases and lawyers. But it's the same principle. You know? So the point is that this is just how administration or management works. So the point is if it doesn't bother you, get involved. If it does bother you, don't get involved. But don't complain about it that it shouldn't be like this. No, this is the way it is. You know what I'm saying? Okay. An alliance which yields present and future advantages, one must know to be of two descriptions. Namely, that which one marches together with an ally, and contrary when the ally acts separately. Right? So now he's pointing out an alliance which yields present and future advantages. If it doesn't give present or future advantages, you don't get involved. You wouldn't use alliance. So if alliance is going to use it, then you can either march together with the ally or march separately. Right? By marching together, they'll see the force of it, and then possibly there won't be a fight. Right? Or by marching separately, then if you move together, then he doesn't care. But if you march separately and you're on two sides, he can't fight with both of you at once. So in either case, then you can actually discuss and there can be conciliation. Does that make sense? Or if not, you're in a good position for fighting. Does that make sense? But unless there's going to be benefit from it, alliance isn't used. Right? It's not a sentimental point. In other words, management is not a matter of sentiment. It's a matter of what works. Right? The sentiment is in how you deal, but as far as the mechanics of it, it's not a matter of sentiment. Right? In other words, you can deal nicely, but you know that's culture. But the point is management stays the same. Yes.
But it seems like Sama and Dana, you can deal nicely, but ultimatum and force, you're already stopping dealing nicely.
It means you've tried dealing nicely. When that doesn't work nicely, then you use force. But there's also rules how you fight and stuff like that. You know, it's just like you don't use mustard gas, and, you know, stuff like that. You know, so that's being nice. You know, yeah, like that. That makes sense. sense. But that's what the point is that there, but even beta, you can present it nicely. But it's just that they should know that you're serious. No? Yeah, so that's generally.
It's also applicable to negotiation, or at least the point of some beta in the 10th canto, when Vasudeva and Devaki get married, and Kamsa's
yes.
on the chariot, and he employs those, you know, one after another
yes,
in
yes.
order to diffuse.
Yes. So he's just trying whatever, and it works.
Yeah.
These things are what work.
Yeah.
War is declared to be of two kinds, namely that which is undertaken in season or out of season, by oneself and for one's own purposes, and that waged to avenge an injury done to a friend. Right, so then it can be within season, without of season, because in season there's proper season for war, right? You know, the winter time, it's like if you fight, you get hot and sweaty. So if you fight in the winter time, then it's not much of a problem, right? You know, winter time we don't mean snow. That's for fighting with Finland and Russians, right? But we're talking about how do you say? It's the cooler time, so it works like that. It's a dry season, you don't have to worry about rain and mud, so your vehicles don't get stuck and stuff like that. Does that make sense? It's also when things are growing, so then you can get food, and so that's in season. Out of season will be not at that time, like that. And so how do you say? And you're fighting for your own purpose, means there's something been wrong for you, or you're fighting in support of a friend. Because if someone is an ally, if he has a problem, you have to support him. Otherwise, when you have a problem, he's not going to support you. Right? Like that. So this has to always be taken. Because the point is, you have to be ready for something. Maybe you go a whole lifetime, there's no war. But you have to be ready. Because if you don't have your allies, then if it appears they're allies, but they're actually friends with the enemy, then you make the thing, we'll work together. Then when it comes time for the war, they're not there. So you always have to be, and if everything's in place, then you can avoid something happening. You know what I'm saying? That's the idea. So if you're always ready for fighting, then others generally leave you alone. If they think that he's weak now, he's not prepared, that's when they'll give you trouble. But if you're always ready, in other words, you can pleasantly be nice, always deal with everybody very nicely, but they know that if they make any trouble, then you're ready for it. Then people tend to leave you alone. Right? So therefore the king is always ready, even though ideally he'll never have to use it. Like you don't hear of so many of the kings going to war, right? Dasarath or any of these others, you don't hear of them going to war. You hear of them doing big sacrifices and different programs like that, but it doesn't mean that they're not ready. But it's because they are ready, people leave them alone. Right? Does that make sense?
Could you say anything about making example, like making an example of one person?
No, you never make an example because people couldn't care less about example in that way. I mean, it's a modern idea, you make example and that'll put the fear of God. It doesn't. It just makes them more upset so they hate you more. So it never works out. It sounds great. It really seems like it's a good moral, but it's not. It never works. The point is that it's not a matter of making an example, there's the law. You follow the law, this is how it works. If you don't follow the law, this is how it works. But if you take it beyond what it is, then it's unfair. So that they've broken the law, that's unfair. That you take the punishment beyond what's the law, that's also unfair. So what's the difference? So it never quite, what I'm saying? It's never worked out, especially if we see like in your neck of the woods, you go into the village and hang the whole village, men, women, and children. It never quite works out for those leaders. After a while, they come and, because before it was just the leaders of the community, they would be talking about it. And the family people, whatever you work out, they'll go along with. But when you come along and hang their women and children, then anybody's willing to go out there and fight. So it didn't exactly work as an example. And so you see in history, that's always how it works. The Chinese would do it, everybody would do it, and it didn't work. But so it's not actually allowed. What is the punishment? That's all that's done. That is the example. It's not, not you don't go beyond that. So that's why we'll see in the next chapter, one has to be very expert at understanding what's exactly right, because if it's right, then the punishment will have been done, the person will have been purified, and everybody will be happy. Right? But if it's not wrong, people won't be satisfied. Because the point is, if you've dealt wrong with this person, you'll deal wrong with anybody. So nobody will feel safe. So your whole purpose of governance is lost.
Is that the difference between the protection and then the justice?
Yes. The point is justice is just to maintain protection. Right? But if your justice goes beyond what is required for protection, then people won't feel protected. You know what I'm saying? Justice is only there to, you know, it's just like, let's say you're raising a child. Punishment is only there to see that the child does the proper thing, is trained and grows up in the right way. It's not the punishment has its own entity, you know, and therefore deserves its own, has its own rights. No, it's only there in how much is required to see that the child is trained properly. If it goes beyond, the punishment is stronger than necessary, then you'll get a bad reaction. But if it's less than necessary, you will also get a bad reaction. That's why the position of the administrator is so delicate. Right? Does that make sense? But people look at the power and position, so they're interested in it. But the point is we see those who are only interested in power and position, it never works out proper for them. You know, at some point, it gets them. You know, it doesn't work out so great. And, so that's why it has to be proper and balanced. You know. Marching to attack is said to be twofold, namely that undertaken by one alone when an urgent matter has suddenly arisen, and that undertaken by allied with a friend. So you can march alone or with an ally. So you generally see in much of these times it's you're doing something yourself or with someone else, or for yourself or for someone else, like that. So that's the when it says the two kinds. Sitting quiet is stated to be of two kinds. That incumbent on one who has gradually been weakened by fate or in consequence of former acts, and that in favor of a friend. Right, so it means, in other words, your position has been weakened and all that, so then you sit quiet, because if you do something, it'll create problem. Because let's say you don't have an army, but so therefore you don't go out marching, because you don't have anything to go out march with, right? So you sit quiet, then people still think you have one. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. Or for a favor to a friend. You would normally attack the other person, but for as a benefit for the friend, you don't. You know, maybe they're trying to work out something with them, so, and they're your ally, so if you attack them, then they'll consider them as part of the thing. So then, you know, for their benefit, you don't. The army stops in one place and its master in another in order to effect some purpose. That is called by those acquainted with the virtues of measures of royal policy, the twofold division of the forces. Right? So it says dividing the forces means the king's in one place, the army's in another. That's dividing the forces. Seeking refuge is declared to be of two kinds. First, so that only has one. Stopping, it means in other words, division of the forces is only one kind. It just means when the two are separated. Seeking refuge is declared to be of two kinds. First, for the purpose of attaining advantage when one is harassed by enemies. Secondly, in order to become known amongst the virtuous as the protege of a powerful king. Right? Right? In other words, if you're a vassal of a bigger king, then you're connected with that king. You know, like Ramachandra, so if you're a king under him, then that's considered glorious. Or it may be you're weak, and so you can't, so therefore you take shelter of a bigger king. Right. So the one is virtuous and the other is just necessity. By all the four expedients, a politic prince must arrange matters so that neither friends nor neutrals nor foes are superior to himself. Right. So in other words, everything is balanced. Because the whole point is balance. Right. When people say, no, but it's the balance of the universe. So this is how politics is balanced. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Let him fully consider the future and the immediate results of all undertakings and the good and bad sides of all past actions. So this is a standard management thing. You know, so future and immediate results means what will be the any endeavor, what result will it give in the future? And what is the benefit immediately? So if that's not, if there's nothing there, then why would it get involved? And whatever you've done in the past, what was good, what gave good results now? Because now is the future from the past. So what gave the results? What it worked then and it's working now. Or what didn't work? So what didn't work, you correct. What did work, you maintain. Does that make sense? He who knows the good and evil which will result from his acts in the future is quick in forming resolutions for the present. Will understand the consequences of his past actions and will not be conquered. Right? So you know what are the good and evil of what will be the good and bad of any endeavor. What will it give in the future? So therefore what will I do now? And you know what is the result, what position you're in by what's in the past. If you don't know what's right and wrong, you can't tell what you'll get or why you're in the situation you're in now. So the king must know that. So that means then you have to know Shastra. You have to study with the Brahmins. That's why he must be educated. Otherwise he won't know. All it is he has is that what he feels like is what he does. But that's not the way it works. You have to be inspired, of course, but it has to be based on Shastra. Otherwise what you do may not have a useful result. Yes.
So it means the Kshatriya has the same training as the Brahmana.
Kshatriya has the same training. Basically, you'll see later in, I think it's in the 10th chapter, that it defines that a Brahmin and a Kshatriya are basically the same thing. Just the Brahmin is not involved in, you know, the administrative elements, because he doesn't have that interest. His interest is more in the spiritual application of the knowledge. While the Kshatriya applies it within the administrative. But otherwise, the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas are basic. That's why you see the Brahmins can function in the court of the king and stuff like that. And kings, when they don't have a kingdom, they just go out in the forest and live as hermits. Like that. You don't hear of the kings going off and doing business or something. You know, they live as, so therefore it's like if they have a kingdom, they live like a king. If they don't have a kingdom, they live like a Brahmin. Right? And the Brahmin, if he needs, the kingdom's not running properly, so therefore they can't be protected. Therefore he gets involved in the administration. But as soon as it's not, then he has no interest. It's not his business. Like Chanakya, he established the king. But he lived in his own hut and went out begging, so he didn't take any benefit from it. He just was there to see it ran nicely so that the kingdom was peaceful. Does that make sense? You know, and if there's a little more passion, then you get those who are fully in the service and remain there. You know, like Drona or like, you know, like that. They're a little bit more involved. But still, they don't get involved like the kings do. Right, they're not involved politically and stuff like that. You know, they give that direction.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Janatai Govardhana.